Going to be called Chenix 3 now, Crusher gloated. He strutted into the room as Jason pulled at the last of the leg restraints off and stood up. What did those clowns want with you anyway? You probably killed a bunch of local contractors. I don't think all six were here in the building, Jason said. Sure, it was after the same target we were. How is he? They had him in that room you just walked in from.
That was him?
Crusher winced.
Well, he's been better.
Jason just stared at his friend. You blew him up when you breached the wall, didn't you?
It was an accident!
A dozen responses flitted through Jason's head, but in the end he just walked silently from the room to look at the aftermath of Crusher's overzealous use of explosives. Despite the damage to the room and the cartel boss himself, Jason was shocked to find he was still clinging to life.
Why?
He croaked out. Sorry, you got caught up in something you didn't really have anything to do with, Jason apologized, actually meaning it. Were they looking for the Confed captain that sold you a shuttle?
Is there any hope?
Jason couldn't tell what he meant until he saw he was trying to gesture to his broken body.
I'm not sure as to the particulars of your species, but you seem pretty screwed to me, Jason told him. Those bastards in Chenix 6 really did a number on you. I think they had the room set to blow to cover their escape.
Crusher gave him a thumbs up at that last bit.
Unit?
Jason nodded to Cage, and the Viren began rooting around in the debris, trying to find a comm unit on the off chance it had survived the explosion. He found it within a minute of looking under what was left of a table, and placed it in the smuggler's remaining hand.
What did they want to know? What did you tell them? Jason pressed.
The smuggler ignored him, his good hand working the comm unit even as his breathing became more labored and his eyes began to lose focus. Apparently satisfied, the comm unit slipped from his hand, and the dying crime boss eyed Jason, seeming surprised that he was still there.
Enoch Line,
he gurgled out before his head lolled over and he was dead.
Are ya happy?
Jason hissed at Crusher.
I'm not sad, Crusher shrugged. What's Enoch Line? Is that a name?
I don't know, Jason asked. Let's ask him. Ah, that's right. You killed him with an explosive blast that, looking at the door right over there, seems to have been completely unnecessary.
I don't tell you how to do your job, Crusher said defensively.
Whatever.
Jason waved him off while Cage finished up picking through the room for any bits of intel that could be helpful.
Where's the battle synth?
Hopefully back at the ship, Cage said. After it wiped out half the crowd in that bar, something went wrong. It began twitching and making odd noises before it locked up and fell over. Twingo came and picked it up with a borrowed ground car.
That's probably not good, Jason said, picking up the discarded comm unit.
What was he doing? Crusher asked.
It looks like he just put out a contract on Jerg's crew, Jason said. Guess he bought my lie about who blew him up.
Nobody will be dumb enough to try and collect on it, Cage said. Chenix 6 is part of the guild, and even the other heavy hitters wouldn't want to take them on.
Don't be so sure, Jason said. These are smugglers, not mercenaries. It's a different ecosystem. They have their own hitters that might take a crack at Chenix just on principle. Either way, it'll give them something else to worry about than getting in our way.
We're leaving?
Crusher asked.
Not much reason to stay unless you'd like to blow up another cartel boss, Jason said. I want to get the hell out of the reaches and see what this Enoch Line business is all about. If it even means anything. Chances are it's the product of the last few random firings of a dying alien's neurons.
Let's try to remain positive about this, Crusher said. Unnecessary negativity can negatively affect outcomes.
If he'd been armed, Jason had no doubt he'd have shot Crusher on the spot.
Chapter 14.
What the hell is that?
Crusher asked, pointing across the spaceport.
Looks like a disagreement turned into a firefight, Jason said. Not exactly noteworthy around this place.
You might think otherwise, Crusher said. Two of the participants are human.
Jason looked across the ramp with renewed interest and saw that there did appear to be two humans exchanging small arms fire with someone he couldn't see. Pale-skinned bipedals weren't exactly rare, but he was certain they were human from the way they moved and their shouts to each other.
"We need to get to the ship," he said with reluctance. "We can't let the Phoenix stay stuck defenseless on the ground and risk Jurg getting to his ship first and recognizing her."
Crusher raised his eyebrows in surprise, but said nothing. Jason reflected on his decision as they continued running, firm in his belief that he'd made the right one. Earth was now initiated into the larger galactic community, and he had no doubt that the people exchanging fire up ahead were part of a covert military unit. His own responsibilities were to his crew and to his ship. If those two conditions could be satisfied first, then perhaps he'd step in if needed. Their luck, such as it had been, held out, and Jason was storming up the Phoenix's ramp with Chenix Six's ship showing no signs of life.
"Are we all aboard?" he asked Doc after sliding into the pilot's seat.
"All here, and the ship is ready to go," Doc said. "Twingo has the battle synth in engineering strapped back down to the fixture."
"Stand by for uplift," Jason said, bumping the rocker switch on the throttle up a few times to get the gunship off the ground and hovering.
Once she was airborne, he pulled up the gear and brought the armament and defensive systems online.
"You look like you're thinking of something devious," Cage said.
"Just thinking I should return the favor to Jurg for all his hospitality."
Jason angled the Phoenix to the left and squeezed off a single blast from the main plasma cannons. The bolt smashed through the landing gear on the right side, sending the mercenary ship smashing into the ground. Cage laughed wickedly when two aliens could be seen through the ship's front canopy, screaming and gesticulating wildly. Jason pushed the ship up and over, still laughing, when he saw that the excitement with the human team near the edge of the ramp hadn't abated. Cage followed his gaze and saw what he was looking at.
"Looks like two light attack flyers are blocking that odd-looking transport from lifting off," he said. "Com chatter seems to indicate they're waiting for reinforcements. Tough break for whoever is on that ship and trying to get out of the area."
"Give me a lock on those two flyers," Jason said.
"What? Why? Let's just get—
"Now!"
"Target lock, two bogeys," Cage said. "Because, apparently, making a clean getaway is far too easy. Let's just randomly shoot the place up before we leave, not caring who we piss off, and then you can sit around wondering why you get captured by Mercs."
He trailed off when he noticed everyone on the bridge had stopped what they were doing to stare at him.
"What?"
Jason accelerated towards the engagement, shooting over all the other parked ships and making people on the ground dive for cover. For such a relatively light target, he deployed the chin turret and commanded the targeting system to automatically track both hostiles. When he squeezed and held the trigger, the quad cannon mounted in the turret began spitting plasma bolts at the two atmospheric fighter craft and their unsuspecting pilots. The first had its drive section blown clear, sending it spiraling around and over the pinned human ship. Before it had even impacted the ground somewhere over the dilapidated security fence, the Phoenix's tactical computer had switched targets and began hammering shots into the second fighter. It immediately wheeled about and tried to flee the area, but the damage was already done. Streaming smoke and flames, the fighter lasted another 10 seconds or so before something critical failed and it exploded in a brilliant fireball. Not wanting to wait around to see what else might be on its way, Jason pulled into a sharp climb and shoved the power up to send them rocketing out of Knot's thin, dirty atmosphere. For being a quick-in-and-out information grab, the whole operation had really gone to shit.
"Channel request coming in from that ship you just saved, Captain," Cage said.
"Put it up on the canopy," Jason said. "I'd rather not be looking down while navigating this mess."
"I owe you one, stranger. We were in..."
"I'll be fucking damned. Jason Burke."
The face on the other end of the channel belonged to a human male who looked like he hadn't shaved in a few weeks. A nasty scar ran from his hairline, over his left eye, and all the way down his cheek.
My thanks, Captain Burke. Did you know who we were when you intervened?
You know me? Us?
Oh, yeah, the man laughed. We're all briefed extensively on Omega Force before we leave Terra Novus in case we cross paths. The official word is that you're still considered a criminal and a traitor to your species, but all the Scout Fleet crews are told what really happened. To answer your question, Crusher noticed that there were a couple of humans involved in a firefight across the ramp, and when I launched, I saw those fighters were keeping you grounded, Jason said. Just lending a friendly hand and giving you a fighting chance. So, what's Scout Fleet?
Captain Ezra Mosler, 3rd Scout Corps, United Earth Navy, at your service.
Scout Fleet is the umbrella name all the Scout Corps crews operate under, Mosler said.
Judging from your ship and your appearance, I assume your missions are of the clandestine nature? Cage asked.
That they are, Cage, Mosler said. Anyway, thanks again, and it's a genuine pleasure to meet you, all of you, even if it's just via a comm channel. I'm sending you a slipcom address over the channel, Captain. It's a way you can get a hold of me if you need to, Jason said. I'm not volunteering to re-enlist, and it's probably a good idea if it stays on a need-to-know basis, but if you get in a bind and can't reach out through official channels, we can be a useful last resort.
Thank you, Captain, Mosler said. Don't worry, I'll keep this under my hat. Mosler out.
The channel closed, and the projected display winked out of existence. On his tactical display, Jason saw the Earth Navy ship peel away and begin accelerating hard towards a mesh-out point. It wasn't a bad-looking little transport, and it had some impressive speed about it.
So, your species, who just began traveling outside of your home star system, is already running covert operations into the Caspian reaches? Cage asked.
No shit, Crusher agreed. I've accepted that you're more or less insane, but I figured you were an isolated case. From what I'm seeing, your entire species appears to be nothing but a group of troublemakers.
This coming from you, of all people.
Did you see any Galvetics down there in a shootout?
Doc, take over here. Jason slid out of the seat. Just get us out of the reaches as quickly as possible. Cage, I want you working on whatever we were able to get from that safe house after Numbnuts blew half of it up. Concentrate on whatever Enoch line might be. I'm going down to see what's going on with the battle synth.
After he'd eaten and checked the ship's vitals on the bridge one last time, Jason went back down to engineering. The first time he'd been down there, Twingo hadn't been able to give him anything positive to grasp onto regarding the battle synth. It was strapped down to the holding cradle that Alloker's people had fabricated before they'd left Satora, and though awake, seemed to be unresponsive. All the instrumentation on the fixer told them its primary systems were all working well within normal limits. So why had it attacked a bar full of people at the slightest provocation? Why did it lock up and shut down afterwards? The practical and ethical problem Jason was now looking at made his head hurt. He was beginning to doubt that there was much hope Lucky would return within the new body in any form they would recognize. And now the thing was proving to be as dangerous as they'd feared. Would not the smarter thing be to deactivate it, turn the body back over to Alloker, and then lay Lucky's remains to rest as they should have done in the first place? As he stared at the expressionless face, he imagined what would happen if it went on a rampage within the ship or if it decided that one of the others was a threat. At this point, the risk seemed far too great given how slim the chances of success were.
I believe it's possible to still save your friend.
What the fuck? Jason nearly leapt out of his skin. Who's down there? Show yourself!
Calm yourself. I'm here with you. I have been for some time.
Jason spun about twice more before realizing that he hadn't actually heard the voice, at least not with his ears. Was he going senile? Doc had mentioned that even though his enhancements slowed his aging dramatically, his brain would likely still follow a normal life cycle.
What are you?
Besides the little voice in your head? That's difficult to explain, really,
Think of me as a reflection of a fragment of a piece of a program. You've had interactions with another version of me before. You called me Kaz.
No. No, that's impossible. Jason had to sit down. Kaz had been an interactive AI program housed within a device called the Key. It had been their guide to the machine. Before they'd managed to destroy it ahead of a Confed battle group that had wanted the machine for themselves, Kaz had given Jason an archive called the Legacy that was the combined knowledge of the species that had built the machine, now long extinct. The contents of that archive were compressed, encrypted, and stored as a static file within his neural implant.
Why is that impossible? You've pulled out the archive twice and accessed it via the AI interface. Did you really think there would be no unforeseen consequences to that? In the spirit of expediency, I'll try to explain what happened to the best of my knowledge. When you created the adaptive interface for the computer you left on your homeworld, parts of the Key's programming were accessed to create it. It was the most logical program to use as a starting point, as it had been designed to interact with alien species. Afterwards, I have to assume that you were careless or unskilled in how you repacked the data, and parts of the Key's programming began to do as it was designed, reach out and communicate. In this case, the only thing to communicate with was your neural implant. Through it, my consciousness began to coalesce, and the memories of your interaction with the original Kaz gave me enough contextual data to recompile myself into the current version.
And you've never made me aware of the fact you're living in my head rent-free? Why?
After gaining access to your sensory inputs, I simply observed as you went about your life, fascinated by your motivations and desires. Once I had gained the requisite knowledge I would need to vocalize to you within your own consciousness, I was afraid that you might purge me.
You were the thing that was fighting the tech from Gen X6, Jason surmised. So why now? Why bother speaking up other than the chance to watch me shit myself?
I believe that I may be the only one who can help Lucky. Even his designers failed to fully understand the marvel they've created, and would likely be unable to guide your friend out of the abyss. Normally, I would view this with a certain stoicism as the normal cycle of life, even artificial life. But the nobility of Lucky's sacrifice to save you is not something easily overlooked.
How would we do this?
You'll have to transfer the archive to a suitable computer and allow me to...
Oh no, we're not doing that, Jason was adamant. That particular Pandora's box has been opened twice too many times as it is. The shit in there cannot be allowed to fall into the wrong hands.
Then why haven't you simply deleted it already?
Jason knew what his reasoning had been, but now that he was face to face with the fact he may have already let the genie out of the bottle, he was seriously reconsidering it. Maybe he should purge the archive and have Doc install a fresh implant. Be done with it, once and for all. There were other AIs on the machine that had been corrupted, gone mad, Jason said. Remember the primary weapons controller AI? How do I know that you're not actually it, and this isn't just another trick?
It's quite impossible to disprove a negative. So how do you propose we settle this debate? Do you take it on faith that I am who I say I am and that I can help? Or do you simply delete me and forget all this ever happened?
Jason's emotions and logic warred within him as he weighed the dangers of the ancient's weapons technology getting out against the life of his friend. Even as he stared down at a body that housed Lucky's brain and, hopefully, his consciousness, he already knew what the decision would be. It would be the same selfish one that had made him open the Legacy to give his species a leg up over others in the Quadrant. The same when it came to keeping or deleting the archive in the first place. In the end, he would do what benefited him the most, and to hell with the consequences. He wasn't particularly proud of how he'd reached the decision, but nor was his shame so great that he was seriously considering going back on it.
So, how do we do this?
Chapter 15.
What news from our sources within the council?
Several have actually gone silent, and the others have nothing hopeful to report, Chancellor. The Confed has used its fleet to intimidate nearly all the holdouts into signing onto the new charter.
Charter? Celadus Dalton sneered. I've read the new accords these systems are being forced to sign. They're being asked to surrender their sovereignty and give control of their world to the Confed bureaucracy.
That is the essence of what's happening, madam, but it doesn't change the fact that most member worlds are falling over themselves to sign. Kobvir Glesh, Minister of Intelligence for the Crydal Cooperative, hated that all he had to bring to Celadus was bad news of late. But that seemed to be all there was. Glesh had been with her since the beginning, and he'd worked for her father, Christoph, before that. He understood her ambition and vision for what the cooperative could be. And so it broke his heart that everything was now in jeopardy, thanks to the Confed's shocking new policies. It seemed the benevolent economic dictatorship that wore the mask of a republic was to be no more. The system everyone pretended to hate but had lived under in relative peace for millennia was giving way to a purely authoritarian regime that seemed bent on power for power's sake, if he was reading the signs correctly.
We could be in real trouble, Kobvir. Celadus turned away from the balcony and walked back into her private offices. The reality of our situation is that we're tolerated by the neighboring powers because we're just strong enough to make the cost not worth trying to squeeze us. We were tolerated by the only superpower in the region, the Confed, because we were harmless enough and made agreements to honor existing trade treaties. We'll need to watch the situation with the Asquarian Empire closely. How the Confed handles this will be an indicator of what they'll likely do to the Zabror Protectorate, and us as well. We need powerful friends, and there are none to be had.
The Avarian Empire might be open to—
Glesh clamped his mouth shut, realizing his error too late. The Avarians had executed her father after a sham of a trial, and though Christoph had been caught in a disgraceful situation, Celadus had not forgotten nor forgiven. There would be no entreaty to the Avarians for assistance. He was spared any further discomfort by an attendant barging into the inner office, looking out of breath. The young man looked sick and was obviously the bearer of yet even more bad news.
Well, Celadus demanded, out with it.
The Confed, the fleet just launched an attack on the Asquarian Empire. They say that they caught the Imperial—
I don't need the details just yet.
Celadus sank into her chair, looking shaken.
Please summon Admiral Colleran and tell her I require her presence immediately. After that, I'll need to speak with the human ambassador.
At once, Chancellor.
So it begins, Glesh whispered.
It took Jason nearly 2 days to gather everything he needed without arousing suspicion. For the time being, he decided against telling the others that he was attempting to build a self-aware interface to help stabilize Lucky's matrix because the voice in his head had told him to. To be fair, most of the day was spent fretting that maybe he was indeed going insane, so he snuck into the infirmary when Doc was on bridge watch and ran a detailed diagnostic of his neural implant. After digging down and doing a comparison to the diagnostic scan he'd had done just after the last mission to Earth, he could see that there were some significant changes. He wasn't sure if he felt better about that or not. Letting a sentient bit of software live in his head seemed risky, given that the hardware it was on was also connected directly to his brain. After some experimentation, He realized that Kaz was limited in its perception. It could see and hear through the implant's connection to his senses, but it couldn't read his thoughts, not even when he sub-vocalized. To communicate, he had to speak aloud to it.
"I've gotta say, I'm still not fully sold on this," he said, after getting everything connected in his quarters.
"Then why are we sitting here? Stop stalling and let's get started. The sooner the program we're about to build can be applied to your friend, the sooner he'll be up and about."
The plan was to use the key program again as a base and build an interface that could be uploaded into the new Battlesynth body. It was something that would only work while Lucky wasn't fully in control. Kaz had reviewed all the technical data they'd brought with them from Alucard's team, and afterward it had seemed even more confident that the problem could be easily corrected. In theory, the new program would go in and provide the necessary bridge between Lucky's confused and likely terrified primary processor matrix and all the subprocessors that operated the body. Once that happened, the stronger Lucky's connection to the body became, the more he would absorb the bridge program until, eventually, it ceased to exist, and he was able to control the body completely on his own. Of course, that was a very simple explanation for something that was essentially only possible using the ancient's knowledge of artificial intelligence. In this quadrant, Khepri stood supreme when it came to self-aware machines in the form of their synthetics, but even they didn't understand much of what made a synth really work, hence the unacceptably low yields when building processing matrices. The ancients, Jason had never learned what they actually called themselves, understood sentience at a fundamental level and could imbue even their software with a sense of self. Of course, in the end, one of their sentient programs had killed them all, but the theory was still sound. "Connect the hardline. I'll need to interface with the base program directly to repurpose the modules we'll need and to suppress its... You know what? You probably don't need all the details. You're a little too squeamish about this already." Jason wordlessly connected the hardline to the connector behind his ear and waited. One of the more disconcerting aspects of Kaz was that it was sort of an asshole for a computer program. It took less time than he thought it would for the software fragment in his head to dig through its own base program on the terminal in his quarters, strip it down to the parts it needed, and then tailor it to the specific task of throwing Lucky's consciousness a lifeline. The amount of trust Jason was putting into what was essentially an accidental partial download thanks to his own carelessness twisted his stomach into knots. What if this actually was the primary weapons controller that had gone insane, and he was actually about to stuff it into a powerful Battlesynth body?
"That wouldn't work anyway."
"Huh?"
"You said that last part out loud.
The Keprian technology is really quite ingenious, even if it was mostly a Lucky accident. But it's completely incompatible with ancient technology."
"But please try to keep up.
The software bridge we're building doesn't control the Battlesynth's body, nor does it influence Lucky's matrix. All it does is try to grab the flailing neural pathways and guide them to each other so that he can begin the process of self-recalibration."
"He's already been up and moving about, though," Jason said. "Shouldn't it just be a matter of getting him talking again?"
"For the love of...
Have you been paying attention at all? This body has been moving with limited input from the matrix. It would be like you trying to pilot the ship by telling someone else to move the controls over a comm unit. And also, you're underwater and you can't feel your arms and legs. Much of what he's been doing has been instinctual, for lack of a better term, and is driven by the subprocessors. If I'm reading these specs correctly, and I am, you're in for quite the shock when this body is capable of its full power."
"You're kind of a dick, you know that?"
"That's your fault, champ. Much of my personality had to be reconstructed using the only input I had available. You."
The software patch was tested and then transferred over to a standard data card within an hour of Kaz starting the whole process. Jason pulled the hard line from his implant and began cleaning up all the equipment that would need to be destroyed. Thankfully, his passenger stayed silent during that. Now that things were calming down and he had the item that, hopefully, would help Lucky fully re-emerge, he wasn't sure what to do about the errant bit of code in his wetware. Kaz had proven useful a few times, but now that he was aware of it, he wasn't sure how comfortable he was with the whole idea.
What have you been up to?
What? Nothing. Jason had been absently walking through the common area on the main deck when the deep voice startled him out of his reverie. Crusher's eyes narrowed and he kept chewing.
I'm watching you, he said. You're up to something. I know it. You've been skulking about like that creepy little code slicer.
You have issues, Crusher, Jason said, changing directions and walking up to the bridge. He hadn't counted on the big idiot being awake and eating again when he'd checked the schedule roster. He was just trying to sneak down to engineering, where he could apply the new software patch and be back in his quarters before anybody knew what was happening.
Shit, he muttered.
He looked over at the pilot's seat and saw Cage sound asleep. Rolling his eyes in disgust, he walked towards him.
Relax. Lucky's been stuck in limbo for a couple of months now. One more night isn't going to make a difference.
I guess, Jason said,
leaning down and putting his face down near Cage's ear.
Wake up!
Cage's eyes flung open, and he stiffened up like a plank of wood, his mouth making strange sucking sounds.
I wasn't...
Unless your next words were about to be, I'm sorry and I'll never fall asleep on bridge watch again, I suggest you keep your mouth shut, Jason told him. Cage eyed him and then just nodded. Jason patted him on the cheek. Glad we have an understanding. When he walked back down off the bridge, he saw that the lights on the main deck had dimmed back down, and he could hear the service bots cleaning up the mess from Crusher's midnight gorging. With another, more careful look around, he snuck down to engineering and used his command codes to lock the door to Twingo's quarters. He couldn't afford him, of all people, seeing him messing about on the cradle. The battle synth looked much the same as it had when he'd last seen it days ago. The vital statistics on the cradle's display were all dead center in the nominal range, as they had been since they'd hooked the body back into the mounts. Using the instructions Kaz had given him, he punched in a 22-digit access code into the panel that put the battle synth body into a diagnostic mode, something that would only be available until Lucky's Matrix took over all functions. Once he received the confirmation that the body was ready for query commands, he slipped the data card into the slot and stepped back, watching the screens flash and twitch as the software made entry. It was a long 10 minutes later when a simple confirmation appeared up on the screen. Bridge applied successfully.
That's all we can do for now. We've given him the tools. The rest is up to Lucky.
That's what Tallis said when we put him in this body in the first place, Jason said sourly.
Yeah, but I actually know what I'm talking about.
That remains to be seen. Chapter 16.
Your immaturity knows no bounds, does it?
Excuse me? Jason looked up from his breakfast.
Someone locked me in my quarters last night. It took me half an hour to override the door.
Twingo was incensed.
Imagine my lack of surprise when I checked and saw that your command codes had been used. It's like you're not even trying to be sneaky anymore.
Sorry, Jason said, floundering. I was drunk.
Typical,
Twingo muttered before going to the galley to get something to eat. Jason relaxed a bit before looking up and seeing Crusher staring at him. The big warrior pointed at his own eyes and then at Jason in a familiar gesture while he ate yet again. They'd all been together so long that all the little idioms and gestures from 6 different species had combined into something uniquely Omega Force. But for some reason, Crusher and Cage preferred to mimic corny shit they'd seen in Earth movies. It had taken Jason almost 6 months to explain to Crusher that Dirty Harry wasn't actually a real person and he hadn't been watching a documentary. For a time after that, he was telling everyone to make his day. Jason was spared from any further recriminations when an alert sounded over the shipwide that wasn't familiar. Twingo stiffened and sprinted back to engineering with Cage hot on his heels. Jason and Crusher just shrugged to each other and followed after. When they slid into the port engineering bay, they saw that the battle synth was looking around and tugging experimentally at the restraints.
Weird. The diagnostic feed from it is shut off. The cradle can't reconnect, Twingo said.
You're welcome.
Would that be because Lucky's matrix has exerted control to the point that it's closing off all external ports? Jason asked. Twingo and Cage looked at each other and then at him suspiciously.
How would you know about that? Cage asked. I've seen you struggle to work a door before. No offense, Captain.
I paid attention when Alaker's people briefed us. Jason ignored Cage's other comment. Lucky? When the name was spoken, the battle synth's head snapped over and focused on Jason with laser-like focus. The intense stare gave him an involuntary shudder and a simultaneous surge of hope.
I'll be damned, Twingo whispered. That's the first positive response we've had since he woke up. Cage, unlock the restraints.
Once the cuffs around the arms, legs, and torso retracted, the battle synth took a smooth, sure step off the cradle and looked around at everyone. Its movements were non-threatening, and it seemed at ease with them all crowded around. Even when Crusher clapped it on the shoulder, it didn't flinch or try to move away as it had before. Let's give it some space, Jason said. Just go about the day normally and let it find its own way.
How much longer are you going to be referring to him as it? Cage asked.
For as long as I can't tell for certain if it's my friend in there looking back at me, Jason said. The battle synth looked over at him again at that and walked over, putting a hand gently on his shoulder. Jason's eyes widened, but he said nothing. The moment was broken when the battle synth turned away and walked out of engineering.
It's not much, but it's definitely progress, Twingo said.
Jason didn't answer him. He'd built up walls around himself, refusing to give in to blind hope, and had been unprepared for the onslaught of emotions when it appeared that Lucky had actually recognized him. For now, all he could do was continue to wait and see, and hope Kaz was who it said it was, and hadn't screwed him over.
You've been paying attention to reports coming from the border worlds?
I still can't believe it, Jason said. The Confed actually launched a preemptive strike against the Asquarian Empire. How bad is it? Mock looked strained on the Slipcom video link. Understandable, given the fact he was Asquarian. Despite the intelligence community warning the High Council of Defense that an attack was imminent, the fleet was caught unprepared, Mock said. Those in charge in the capital ignored the reports and felt secure that the new Confed leadership was posturing to make a name for itself, and that it was just the usual harmless back and forth. Six Confed squadrons swept across the Asquarian system and subdued our, their, entire defensive grid in less than 14 hours. Thankfully, the loss of life was minimal. The Prime Minister agreed to meet with emissaries to discuss terms.
Holy shit, Crusher murmured. This doesn't bode well for the rest of the quadrant.
Not if they have something the Confed wants, Mock said. Your own Galvator could be at risk if they do not ally themselves with someone powerful, and quickly.
I'm sure they're watching, but I'll certainly be passing that along.
So the Empire has actually fallen? Jason asked.
They won't couch it in such dramatic terms, but yes, Asquarian sovereignty has ended as we've known it, Mock said sadly. The military and industrial base will be secured quickly, and then the Confed will send expeditionary forces into the Concordian cluster to subdue the rowdier colony worlds.
In the end, the Empire will have gone out with a whimper, not a bang.
I'm genuinely sorry to hear that, Jason said.
Thank you, Captain. Now, to current matters, Mock said. Cage had reached out to me about this Enoch line business.
This was even trickier than he had thought it might be, with nothing more than a single name to go on. I had to dig deep into my sources for this one.
I'll make sure you're compensated, you old mercenary, Jason said. From this long lead-up, I'm guessing you actually found something?
I'll take payment in the form of favors to be cashed in.
The usual, Mock smiled.
It turns out Enoch Line isn't a thing, at least not like we were originally thinking. It's part of a system. High-ranking Confed fleet officers developed it nearly 200 years ago to provide a discreet method of escape should any of them become embroiled in a scandal. It could range from relations with the wrong person's mate to accidentally sterilizing a planet, anything that could have them brought up on charges that could see them residing inside a fleet brig for any length of time. The system was decently sophisticated. It would provide new identities, transport, cover stories, the complete workup you'd only normally see with an intelligence organization.
I'm sure that Confed Intel section had something to do with it, Doc said. Or at least a few enterprising agents who were willing to take payment to set it up.
So what is Enoch Line? Jason asked.
It refers to the diagram that each of the participating officers carried with them. Each line was a path through the contacts and locations one would access during their escape, Mock said. It was all highly secretive and coded in a way that made it look like any other ubiquitous tech manual a fleet captain or admiral might have in his possession. The terms for the routes used are also the passcodes, which is why your smuggler probably grunted it out as his last words. Unfortunately, nobody has ever actually gotten their hands on one long enough to decode it.
So that's it? We've chased this as far as we could? Twingo asked.
Not necessarily, Cage said. Once Mock's people put me on the right track, I used the fact this officer sold his shuttle to a specific smuggling operation on Knot as a cross-reference point. My contacts on Colton Hub, who have heard of this exit plan, have a pretty good idea the Enoch Line routes all ended up at one place, Taurus Station.
There was a collection of groans around the table at the mention of the former mining colony.
I guess you guys haven't heard the news, have you? Mock asked with a chuckle. Taurus isn't a way station for degenerates, mercs, and pirates anymore.
Settlement rights for the asteroid lapsed, and the government on Eldaf Prime petitioned the Confed to come clean the place out in exchange for a 50-year priority contract at their largest shipyard. The fleet sent in their shock troops, and as of 7 or so years ago, the place has been building up as a luxury community.
Why would anyone want to live in a hollowed-out asteroid? Crusher asked.
They've installed massive transparent domes so the tenants get an unparalleled view of the ring planet it orbits, Mock said.
You sound like a salesman, Cage said.
I've been looking at property there, Mock shrugged defensively. Shit, can we even get on the station now? Jason asked.
If it's gone legit, they'll probably question why an unregistered gunship wants to land in their hangar.
I'll take care of it, Mock said, with a dismissive wave. The real problem is that we have no idea who this officer is.
I think we know what he looks like, and we have his old name from when he was still in the fleet, Jason said. That's not super helpful, but it's better than nothing. Maybe if we...
Wait. We should have an image of him on the Phoenix's comm server. We talked to him through two-way video before we hauled his ass out of the fire.
You're certain it's the same person? Mock asked. When Jason nodded, he went on. Then get me that image and I'll go to work on my end. With the Confed rolling over the Empire, this now became more than just an interesting sidebar to my day.
Speaking of, I have some information on Alloker.
I have a feeling we're not going to like this, Cage said, as Mock looked off camera to pull up some new information.
Alokur was a member of Kefrian intelligence. He was forced out of the service back before your mission there. A few comments in his official record indicate that he was obsessed with a conspiracy theory involving battle sense and a possible coup attempt by some shadowy organization, Mach read from a prepared brief. Despite his insistence that someone was attempting to overthrow the government, he wasn't able to provide a shred of proof to back up his claims. You know, the fact he came to you for this mission to find a Confed officer now makes a lot more sense.
It does, Jason agreed. It was all an illusion. The resources he brought with him were all he had. He couldn't just call back to the home office to have a strike team assembled to track this guy down.
But why did he have all those synth program scientists and techs? And why did he steal a body and all the data from the lab Cage and Twingo found?
I seem to remember that I was there too, Mach grumbled.
But to answer your question, I have no idea. I'm just telling you this so you know to be careful around this guy. He's lied to you once already, so there's no telling what else he's saying that isn't true.
Understood, Jason said. Thanks for the heads up. We'll change course for Taurus Station now and wait for your next update. Keep your head down until we figure out what the Council is up to. If they just took out a sovereign power, it seems like all the old agreements are off, and your organization might be in the crosshairs.
Mach just nodded to him and killed the channel.
So, if Alokur lied, why are we still doing this? Crusher asked.
People lie to us all the time. You lie to us all the time. It doesn't change the job we agreed to do. Doc, go ahead and punch in our course change while Cage and I start digging through the server for the vid recording of the conversation we had with that battleship captain.
Jason stood and stretched, bumping into the battle synth as he did.
Taurus Station, it said, in a rich baritone voice. It was the first time it had spoken, so everyone in the cramped conference room on the command deck froze.
Yeah, we're going there next, Jason said carefully. Is there some reason we shouldn't?
No, it said. We have never been there before, have we?
No, we went to the habitable planet within that system, Lucky. Doc said.
Lucky, the battle synth said. Lucky. Then it turned and walked from the room, heading towards the bridge.
That's progress, Cage said. He has a deeper voice than he used to, but at least he's talking now.
A parrot can talk, Cage, Jason pinched the bridge of his nose. But yeah, at least this is going forward and not backwards.
Doc, better get up there and make sure it doesn't start messing around with something and kill us all.
They all started filtering out, but before Jason could slide out the hatch, Crusher barred his path with a massive arm.
I know what you're up to, he said ominously.
Jason just stared at him, trying to figure out how much he knew.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
This mission, Crusher went on. You're still on it, because you know Chenix 6 is still chasing this guy. You're pissed you were captured so easy, and you want some payback.
Jason almost blew out the breath he had been holding in relief. As usual, Crusher didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground.
You got me, he said. That bother you?
No, but if we're flying into this for revenge, it's probably smart to let me know so I can back you up.
Jason just furrowed his brow at that before shrugging and giving up what Crusher's ulterior motive for the conversation was.
Will do. Good talk. He patted the massive shoulder and slid out of the room before the conversation got any stranger.
The truth was that he wouldn't mind stomping a new hole in Jurg, and he knew the Merc captain was likely either hunting the officer or hunting him after the damage he did to the ship, but it wasn't the main reason to not abort the mission. He needed to get Alokur face to face again and find out what the squirrely Pruce spook was up to. The conspiracy theories aside, the interest in battle synth hardware and personnel looked an awful lot like he was trying to set up a new business venture somewhere. If so, who were the clients? If it was the Confed, then he was likely helping them to eliminate one of the few people that knew who was controlling the Council. If Alokur was in bed with them and had stolen a heap of battle synth tech, the results could be nothing short of catastrophic. He highly doubted that the new Confed would employ the same ethical restraints as the Keprians when it came to the development and deployment of battle synths. Chapter 17.
The Ashquarian campaign went as you predicted, much to the surprise of our fleet masters.
Of course it did. And why wouldn't it? The Ashquarians were as surprised as your fleet masters that we were actually going to impose our will through use of force. For over 2,000 years, you've all squabbled back and forth. But nobody has had the vision or the courage to unify you.
Is that what we're doing? Unifying people? Councilman Sklees asked. He was now actually Minister Sklees under the new regime, a title he wasn't used to or even sure he wanted, given the price so far.
Because the Ashquarian Empire is no more. We'll allow them to maintain the illusion for a short time, that they might retain their independence while we bring them into the fold. But soon, all the old vestiges of their pitiful little empire will fall away, replaced by systems we put in place. You're not having second thoughts, are you, Minister?
Of course not, Sklees said, in a way he hoped was convincing. Years ago, when this new player had approached him through intermediaries, and had suggested this course of action, he'd dismissed it out of hand. The next time a representative met with him, they brought enough material of his own illicit activities to ensure his execution on his own planet. He remembered the day well, almost to the exact instant that he realized he was compromised, and that he'd served this new master to save his own wretched skin. At first, he viewed the turn of events with a pragmatic eye. New factions, families, or star systems would rise to prominence and, for a time, control the Confed Council through bribes or threats. None of it really mattered because nothing ever changed. Member systems still came to the Council with their petty concerns. The core worlds would ignore them for the most part, and their mighty Starfleet would only get involved if a dispute really got out of hand. As long as everyone paid their taxes, something that happened automatically thanks to the Keprians, then everyone got along well. Why should he be too concerned about the latest in a long line of power-hungry opportunists? As it turned out, he should have feared for much more than his own life and reputation. It quickly became apparent that this newcomer was not only a foreigner from outside the Confed, but was cunning and utterly ruthless in how he went about achieving his goals. In less than 10 years, he'd managed to control all the core world delegates within the Council completely, and all without ever making a public appearance. The truly terrifying part to Sklees was that as quadrillions of citizens went about their lives, they had no idea that something truly evil had taken root in the Confed's already rotten core. They'd learn soon enough, though. This attack on the Ashquarian Empire was only the beginning. The fleet would roll over the lesser local powers in short order, and then, once his grip on the Quadrant was ironclad, he would set his sights on the Avarian Empire. Madness.
Damn, they really have cleaned things up. The last time we were through here, there was orbital trash trailing along behind Taurus, Jason said.
I think that was part of their defensive strategy, Doc said. It only left 3 approach vectors unless you wanted to risk colliding with one of the burned-out wrecks they just left abandoned.
The Phoenix had been stuck in a holding pattern for the last 6 days as Mach had been unable to get them the landing clearance he'd promised. It wasn't that the crime boss was lacking in juice.
It was more that the heavy construction happening within the station meant that even if he could get them a priority clearance, there wasn't any room in the main or auxiliary hangars for a ship as small as the Phoenix. The name of the game was Anonymity, and landing the gunship with no cargo on a special permit was a surefire way to be memorable. One bright spot had been that their proximity to the station had allowed Cage to slice into their network and use a sizable chunk of bandwidth to begin combing through records, trying to get a match on the images they pulled from the Phoenix's comm server. If they could get a generalized location from hits on security cameras, it would help give them an edge when it came time to actually get on the station. A not-so-bright spot during the prolonged wait was that the battle synth seemed to have regressed after a flurry of activity once Jason applied the software bridge. It had gone from stating basic concepts and asking questions to then just repeating "lucky" over and over. After a while, it stopped even doing that and was now just sitting on the floor near the galley, refusing to move. Kaz had told him to calm down, and that these sorts of aberrant behaviors were to be expected when a process as complex as integration was attempted while both the Matrix and the body were fully powered up. Jason told Kaz to shut the hell up, or he would dig the implant it lived on out of his head with a spoon. The nonsensical threat must have worked, as it had been mercifully silent.
"I have an idea." "Spoke too soon," Jason muttered.
"What?" "What?" Cage asked. Jason waved him off and waited for the voice in his head to elaborate.
"We'll never get a landing spot with this strategy. There are heavy construction haulers lined up halfway around the planet. However, there are about 24 hard dock points that the Phoenix could easily connect to. Have your gangster buddy falsify some credentials for Cage to go and do maintenance in the security complex."
"Why there?"
Jason asked under his breath.
"He'll be able to search through images using the hardware at the source. It will be more efficient than trying to scour through directory after directory using the uplink."
"Doc, I have an idea," Jason said, and quickly relayed what he wanted Mach to do in order to get Cage where he could do the most good.
"That's really not a bad idea," Cage said thoughtfully. "We'd even be able to take in a sizable chunk of armament hiding inside equipment cases. Make sure that Mach lists the contract as general maintenance and not repair. It'll be suspicious if our docking permit comes through before I have a chance to break their system."
Jason sat and basked in the adoration of the crew as they told him how brilliant his idea was and how impressed they were that he'd thought of it. Through it all, he swore he could almost feel Cass sulking in the background. By the time Mach's permit breezed through and the Phoenix was given docking instructions, Cage and Twingo had managed to fabricate a set of two rolling cases that would easily house, and more importantly, sensor shield, any personal weaponry the team might want to bring along. In a decision that set off another heated argument, Jason decided to split the crew evenly and only take Crusher and Cage with him onto the station. Twingo and Doc would man the ship and be on standby for a quick escape, and the battle synth would continue to hold down the deck plate in the galley as it still stared off into space, oblivious to their presence. Once that was settled and Jason had finally convinced Crusher that most network analysts wore sleeves and didn't wear armor, he pulled the Phoenix out of the holding formation and began to chase after Taurus Station. Jason asked Kaz what it calculated the odds at that they would be able to identify and grab the fleet officer without any trouble. But apparently, the AI wasn't speaking to him at the moment. Chapter 18. The construction taking place within Taurus Station was so expansive that the three of them were ushered through the security checkpoint without much more than a curious glance at the hulking galvanic warrior that was claiming to be a network analyst. Cage could talk the talk, however, and Virans were renowned throughout the quadrant as experts in technology, so within 10 minutes of exiting the airlock, they were walking freely inside the hollowed-out asteroid. Cage had been so convincing, and had done such thorough recon before they'd even docked the Phoenix, that the poor sap managing the security checkpoint called for a vehicle that would take them directly to a place it called Central Operations, or at least that's how it translated. The code slicer confirmed that it was exactly where they needed to be heading, and they all piled into the automated ground car that could barely fit the three of them and the two-wheeled crates of gear.
"Credit where credit is due. I'm impressed," Crusher said. "Either you've just decided to begin taking your job seriously, or you've had some extensive training while we were gone.